The country that is eating the largest amount of genetically modified food is the country that knows least about that fact.
The voice of Dr. Vandana Shiva, renowned Indian physicist and global leader in the opposition of genetically modified organisms, traveled to San Francisco to participate in Reclaim the Commons, a gathering of activists seeking to protest and provide an alternative to biotechnology and other global issues. I'm Carolyn Crane. I was on the streets June 5th through 8th, interviewing authors, activists, and counter-protesters. I was also inside the huge Bio 2004, this year's rendition of the largest annual gathering of biotechnology advocates on the planet. During these 4 days, people advocated for, protested against, and debated the merits and dangers of biotechnology's effect on food, medicine, and defense. Journalist David Kupfer.
We're dealing with two different paradigms here, and it's quite epic.
On Tuesday, June 8th, a small group of protesters participated in direct actions, causing the San Francisco Police Department to close the intersection of 4th and Howard, the apex of Moscone Center, where Bio 2004 was in full swing. From one of the upper floors of the convention hall, conference attendees looked down on the dozens of protesters and hundreds of police. I spoke with one woman who would identify herself only as a person who worked for industry.
I find it interesting. I haven't ever really seen anything quite like this close up, so we've been watching them intently. Actually, the main discourse that we've been having is that we wonder how much of them could actually enter into an intelligent debate about what they're protesting, and that it would be better if there was education so that the debate that we're having here, or that we could have here, would actually rise to the level of having some intelligent interaction back and forth so that we can actually talk about it and find out if we could resolve some of the issues they may be truly concerned about. And there certainly are issues where limits need to be placed, and I don't think we've had a good national debate on what those are.
We need to increase transparency and increase dialogue. That's what they said. But you don't see any activist consumer group on any panels in any of these workshops, and only a small percentage of them even deal with, you know, issues related to consumer concerns and environmental concerns. No, it's all about increasing your market share and getting your product to market.
On Howard Street that morning, a young protester addressed a long line of police in riot gear.
It's just a little briefer on it is genetic engineering, where they're taking like bacteria, genes that kill butterflies, and putting them into corn. So unfortunately, the FDA decided they didn't need to be labeled, and a lot of us right now are eating Doritos or corn tortillas that might actually contain genetically engineered food, and a lot of people are quite concerned. What's going to happen to the butterflies? What's going to happen to our kids when we eat a lot of this stuff? So that's what the protesters are here today about, and I know that you guys are all concerned because you guys eat, so thanks for being here, and yeah, find your buddy, and we'll all keep educating ourselves about the issue. Thanks. The butterfly was the theme of a song sung on Market Street the previous Saturday by Nevada County's Kipchoge and the Ginger Ninjas, who participated in a permanent march to protest United States' global dominance. Activists dressed as butterflies also marched Sunday from south of Market to Union Square to participate in a Reclaim the Commons activity called a Really, Really Free Market. I spoke with one of the butterflies.
Well, the butterflies, for better or for worse, have sort of become the poster child for collateral damage caused by genetically modified crops. Scientists, when they splice genes from one organism into another, in addition to getting the effect that they're striving for, get a tremendous number of unpredictable consequences, which are potentially drastically destructive to all living creatures, from butterflies to microbes to us human beings.
A butterfly, be a butterfly. Be a butterfly.
Standing on the corner of 4th and Howard Streets, midday June 8th, were four young men who stood out from the crowd of colorful and vocal protesters. They were from an activist group called Bureaucrash. One held a sign that said, "Monsanto bad, biotech good," and another carried a sign reading, "Capitalism heals, socialism kills." I spoke with them both.
Would you comment on the validity of the precautionary principle?
As far as that goes, I think it's a very valid thing. I completely agree with that. However, it seems like it's in the company's, it should be in the company's best interest for them to do the research first. They should not want to kill their own customers. And if they do, people should be suing these companies for hurting them. That's the way the system should work. I understand that right now the corporations are in with the government in ways that makes that almost impossible in cases, and that's a big problem. That should be solved. But the precautionary principle is something that, as a producer, I inherently have, because I shouldn't want to be hurting people and get sued. Corporations have a problem because they have limited liability. If that weren't there, I think this wouldn't be such an issue.
Want to tell me what your sign says and why you're here today?
My sign says, "Capitalism heals and socialism kills." And I'm here because I believe in biotechnology, and I see it firsthand. My wife actually has Crohn's disease, and every 2 months she gets a treatment called Remicade, and it's just a dramatic transformation. Before, she was in constant pain, and now she's able to live a normal life because of biotechnology.
And there is no treatment available to help her that does not involve biotechnology. It's her only option.
None whatsoever. That is her only option if she wants to lead a normal life, like a lot of these protesters out in the street. They're lucky. They have their health. But if they had to choose between living in the pain my wife has to and choosing biotechnology, they would choose biotechnology. No questions asked.
So in bureaucrash.com, tell me a little about the platform of your activist organization as it relates to corporate personhood.
We are a completely free market organization. A corporation is a business that has purchased a license from the government. In other words, the government has intervened into the economy. So we're not in favor of corporations at all. Corporations are against the free market. So we want a true free market where the businesses are responsible for their actions, individuals are responsible for their actions.
How would that relate to a huge business, say, setting up a polluting shop in another community it doesn't live in and polluting the water and environment, et cetera, as happens now all the time?
Exactly. As happens now, it's a problem because there's a lot of public property the government doesn't sue when it's polluted. If I own the fishing rights to a stream that a company upriver is polluting, I can sue that company. That's the way that system should work, and it should be a lot easier to do that. I know right now that's almost impossible, but we need to be moving in that direction.
Luke Anderson wrote Genetic Engineering, Food, and Our Environment.
We now have a city of San Francisco courting the biotech industry for supposed economic development and job creation. And have we learned nothing from the dot-com industry? Since the 70s, since the biotech industry was born, it's been through all kinds of boom and bust cycles already. Investments totaled about $100 billion, cumulative net losses about $40 billion. These corporations in the 80s were churning out hype about gene therapy leading to miracle drugs, miracle cures for cancer, for Alzheimer's disease. What do we see after 20 years of gene therapy research? Thousands of people made sick, dozens killed in gene therapy experiments, and not a single person cured anywhere in the United States of any disease by any gene therapy. What we hear now is, you know, yes, still, we've got this new miracle cancer that extends the life of terminal patients by 2 months. Well, good that you've got a drug that extends people's lives by 2 months. But how come it is that, you know, you don't understand why we're protesting when you also produce cancer chemicals that cause cancer? Bayer Corporation, for example, here in this meeting, produces two chemicals known by the state of California to cause cancer, two agricultural chemicals, also produces two best-selling cancer treatment drugs. This is the kind of systemic problems that we're here critiquing.
I went with KVMR science reporter Alan Stoller into the exhibit hall of Bio 2004. I asked Alan to translate some of the scientific lingo for me, and we spoke with various people staffing their exhibits.
Here we have Galileo, true disease genes with Galileo's chromosome. Best founder population, LD-based genome, wide scanning, high accuracy, haplotype sharing. What they're looking at is looking at your genes or someone's genes and looking for what's a little bit different, looking for patterns of, well, if you have a genetic disease, that means you have a certain pattern that causes you to have that disease because your genes are a little bit different.
Dow Pharmaceutical Sciences, we say we're the D in topicals R&D, so our business is topical products. We do formulation development, analytical services, stability studies, skin penetration studies, preclinical studies, manufacturing and labeling of clinical materials. We have clinical sites where we do phase 1, 2, and 3 dermatology studies, and we do regulatory for clients. So what we do basically is take a client's active drug, put it into a topical formulation, make it stable and elegant, and do all the testing that's required, including the FDA regulatory strategies and working with the FDA, doing the clinical trials to take products through the FDA.
Is Dow Pharmaceuticals part of Dow Chemical?
It is not. We're a privately held company with founded by Gordon Dow. For 27 years we've been in this business, but we're often, people often think that we're part of Dow Chemical, but we're not.
Biotech medicine, I'm not sure. First they give you cancer, then they profit off the cure. Biotech medicine, I'm not sure. First they give you cancer, then they profit.
CellGenesis is a company focused on cancer, primarily cancer vaccines, and we have several cancer vaccines that are in clinical studies at the moment. Our lead cancer vaccine being GVAX, prostate cancer vaccine, which is about to go into phase 3 clinical trials, and it should go into phase 3 by the end of the second quarter, which is a few weeks from now. We also have what are called oncolytic virus therapies and then some preclinical anti-angiogenesis therapies. But CellGenesis really is a financially stable company based in South San Francisco, California, with manufacturing facilities in Hayward, California, San Diego, California, and Memphis, Tennessee. But we are truly focused on hopefully being able to provide some treatment options for patients down the road who are afflicted with cancer.
Luke Anderson.
And the healthcare for profit model, a healthcare system that actually provides these corporations with an investment in a sick population. The more that people can be pushed drugs from the time they're age 4 when they start acting up in school and they get put on Ritalin, to through their teenage years when they get put on Prozac for suffering depression, maybe something that's meant to happen while you're an adolescent, till the moment they're dead, the more money they're making. Is that really a sane healthcare system?
I support protesting. I think it's important for our process, and I think it's a little extreme how many people they have out there with a small amount of protesters. You know, the snipers on the roof. I support it. It takes a lot of guts to stand up for what you believe in. We don't do that enough in this country.
You say that, and yet you're inside staffing a booth at the biotech convention. What does that bring up for you, the fact that you're in here when you have sympathies for those out there?
Sometimes change starts from within, and it can't be an us and them. I think if you want to make change, you have to start educating people on both sides. You can't just assume that the people outside are bad or vice versa.
Healthcare for profit means that these corporations actually have little investment in solutions that really keep people healthy. The more that they can push these drugs from the moment they go to school, there's 11 million children on Ritalin, until the moment they die, the more profit there is to be made. These biotech companies care about people's health as much as the tobacco industry cares about cancer.
I asked one man in the exhibit hall why the law firm he was representing had a booth at Bio 2004. He was glad to talk to me until I brought up the World Trade Organization. Then the interview was over.
We're here to meet with some of our clients and potential clients to explain what we do in intellectual property law, how we can assist biotech companies that are either mature companies or ones that are starting out to protect their inventions and create a strong position, you know, for their business.
What's your opinion of the GATS, General Agreement on Trades and Services in the WTO, that affects intellectual property rights?
At a Reclaim the Commons teach-in June 5th, Vandana Shiva had given some background about the connection between biotechnology and the WTO, or rather its predecessor, the GATT.
Must have been about 17 years ago, 1987, I was at a meeting near Geneva where the biotech industry was laying out its plans. That's the time I came to know about a trade treaty that was being negotiated called the General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs with Agriculture and Intellectual Property Rights. That's the time I came to know that the reason they needed to deploy genetic engineering was because only by doing that could they do agriculture, produce medicine in ways that ordinary human beings don't. It was their comparative and competitive advantage. But most importantly, they needed new monopoly rights, new intellectual property, to make it all happen.
From medicine to intellectual property to defense, biotechnology has an investment interest. Anthony Martino from the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory explains the connection between biotechnology and biological warfare.
Actually, this is a demonstration from two of the national labs in the Bay Area here, Sandia National Labs and Lawrence Livermore National Labs. Our programs are very tightly related. What we're involved in is understanding biodefense systems, primarily for civilian applications. So we work the biodefense problem end-to-end, understanding the threat, building detection systems that could be used in surveillance, building restoration technologies and systems, decontamination technologies, end-to-end systems to help restore facilities to operation should there be an attack with anthrax or something like that. And most importantly, what we do is we translate these into demonstrated systems. We have seen in the country we have been attacked with anthrax in civilian applications. The person who did that is still out there. There's continued concern about the next attack. The country basically is posturing to be prepared for those sorts of attacks. We're talking about technology here that is increasingly available to more and more countries around the world, more and more sub-state actors. I mean, the biotechnology is kind of every positive and negative. I mean, almost any new technology suffers from this challenge that it offers us fabulous new benefits in health care, fabulous benefits in our ability to produce additional products, to improve our standard of living, to improve styles of life across the world, to bring food to people who are starving in the third world. On the other side of that is the increasing ability to manipulate biological materials poses an increasing threat, that you can and we need to worry about.
Biotech's not welcome here. Go home.
Martino is one of thousands who states that biotechnology has the capacity to solve the problem of world hunger. Many claim this also about the Green Revolution of the 1980s, which produced bumper crops for a brief period, only to fail in the long run, leaving depleted or contaminated soil in its wake. Vandana Shiva spoke at length about this issue on Saturday, June 5th. She spoke to a Capacity House at the Unitarian Universalist Church on Geary Street in San Francisco.
And something was wrong with the story of the Green Revolution that every textbook and every propaganda tells you. Because even now, biotechnology is offered as the second Green Revolution. It's always offered as solving through technology the problem of food entitlements. The Green Revolution was given a Nobel Prize for Peace, but it left war in Punjab. A war that killed 30,000 people. That's six times more than the people we lost in the 9/11 attacks. If the Green Revolution was about prosperity and peace, but the farmers were experiencing deprivation and we had war, something was wrong with the story. And so I started to study it. And at the end of it, came to a few very simple conclusions. One, that the Green Revolution was never about feeding people. It was really about finding a new deployment of weapons of mass destruction that had no use after the wars. Pesticides that were used to kill people were now used to kill insects. But of course, they would also kill people, as in the big leak of the Union Carbide Bhopal gas disaster. 3,000 people dead in one night, 30,000 people dead since then. Hunger throughout human history has been localized in space and time. In some places, some people stayed free for a short while because of a drought, because of a flood, because of a war. But that permanently a billion people would be denied food is an achievement of a world based on capital-intensive farming, control of agribusiness over agriculture, and systems of food production and food distribution designed not for human welfare, but for corporate welfare. That's why we have hunger today. We have hunger because farmers who have to buy the seeds and the chemicals can't afford to keep the food they've grown. They have to sell it immediately just to pay back the debt. And what they sell at a quarter pie price, they buy at four times that price to eat as food. Most people who are hungry today are rural people who are producing food. Earlier, hunger was an urban phenomenon. Now it has become a problem faced by producers of food, which should tell us something is wrong with the way we are producing food. The only reason it goes wrong is farming is no more about producing food and giving a just return to the labor of the producer. It is about corporations having the freedom to extract more and more from the farmer in terms of selling inputs, and more from the consumers in terms of selling bad food. And at both ends, those who do not work to produce end up being the ones who gain. Everyone else loses. Farmers lose with their very lives. Consumers also lose with their very lives. And the obesity epidemic should be a wake-up call to us, that we are paying for this commodity-driven food culture, industry-driven, agribusiness-driven food culture with our very lives. And it's time for us to say, we will live, we will celebrate our lives, we will grow food of the kind that nourishes the earth and our bodies.
In the hallways of the various buildings at Bio 2004, large cardboard advertisements promoted different biotech products. One was for a new pill to counter obesity. Others were for pills to alleviate heart problems. I noticed these many times and also watched the conference attendees stand on escalators as they ascended, choosing not to take the stairs or walk up the escalators. Processed foods sold quickly at the cafes inside Moscone Center. Over the days I was there, I came to recognize the paradigm of privilege. Why climb stairs when there is a pill to stay fit? During a luncheon I attended, thousands ate an elegant meal of poached salmon. Waiters attended to our every whim. In the banquet hall, which easily seated thousands at round white linen-covered tables, four gigantic flat screens projected a video, which displayed corporate logos alternately with photos of healthy, down-to-earth people having fun outdoors. Within an entirely artificial environment, attendees could feel connected with nature. What seemed real wasn't. At the Bio 2004 gala, women posed as statues in fountains, fooling the conference attendees until they waved or adjusted their bodies. What seemed to be stone was actually alive. In the world of corporate biotechnology, little is what it seems to be. David Kupfer.
This industry would be 30% of what it is were it not for government subsidies. People have got to realize that without government subsidies, this industry would not exist as it does today. We don't subsidize organic farming, and that doesn't have any moral or ethical implications or environmental implications compared to all this biotech stuff.
90% of all GM crops planted anywhere in the world is Monsanto. Monsanto went on record in saying that in shaping the intellectual property rights rules, we were the patient, the physician, and the diagnostician all in one. Basically, in effect, saying WTO is us, White House is us.
Luke Anderson.
Essentially, what we have here is the most powerful pharmaceutical corporations in the world, the most powerful biotech agribusiness corporations, and there's a whole host of things that they're doing that are causing big problems, that are going to sow the seeds for big problems in our future as well.
When the exhibit hall closed for the evening on June 8th, wine bottles and glasses were strewn about, mixed in with the occasional empty bottle of hard liquor. The exhibitors had enjoyed a happy hour, and the faint smell of alcohol permeated the room. I stood with Alan Stoller and surveyed the scene.
It's extraordinarily complex. As we look out here over the displays of hundreds upon hundreds of manufacturers and scientists, scientific firms, and law firms, and entrepreneurs, and looking at the ideas that are here, and some of them are right out of science fiction, but here they are if you can do it. We can't just dismiss it for no other reason that there's an awful lot of energy and resources and intellect and money behind all this. So it is moving. I won't say it's scary, but it's certainly, if people are not concerned, then they're not paying attention. And that is probably my concern, is that a lot of people are not paying attention.
Dr. Vandana Shiva.
This is not a rule-based system. It is a system for misrule. This is not a system for justice. It is a system to put brute force into place at every level, in every national government, in every international institution. Across the world, north and south, rich and poor, citizens are voting for GM-free food. And the campaign on GM-free zones, in my view, is one of the fastest growing movements of our times. We cannot leave it to lip service. We have to turn the freedom from genetic engineering and freedom from the corporations that would push it, and freedom from the governments that would help the corporations. We have to turn it into our life choices. That's a choice we can and we must make. There is another area where we just have to start working much stronger. When I started Navdanya, I started with the commitment that I could not think of life and its rich diversity as human invention and therefore as human property. The privatization and ownership of living resources was unacceptable to me. But 93 onwards, when we could see the new GATT coming into shape, we organized huge rallies and started making the commitment that we would not recognize patents on life, because for us they were a moral degradation. We call it the Bij Satyagraha. Bij means seed, that from which life arises. Satyagraha is the fight for truth. And we take our inspiration from Gandhi, who said, there is no superstition and no myth as deep as the one citizens start to believe that unjust laws and brute force are meant to be obeyed. Unjust laws are meant to be not cooperated with. A higher humanity demands that of us.
Thanks for listening. I'm Carolyn Crane at KVMR in Nevada City, California, produced with assistance from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Butterfly.